yes, we'll put it together and we'll get it all done. Someday when the world is much brighter.
This is Frank Sesich of Blue Ash, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
I'm Ralph.
And I'm Bill.
We're the tech guys.
Not the car guys.
But if you love car talk and use a computer.
Or the internet.
Or Zoom.
And you have glitches, grief, hassles.
Or maybe you just have a stupid question.
We're the wise guys with answers.
Sometimes stupid answers, but...
Monday nights, 7 p.m. WGXC.
Tech Talk, 518-697-7400. Tech Talk. Tune in.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Emil Munson and Claire Bryan are reporting for the Times Union that after days of waiting, former Vice President Joseph Biden clinched the American presidency on November 7th. Biden slowly cruised to victory, winning more votes than any previous presidential candidates and crossing the determinative threshold of 270 electoral votes when he won his birth state of Pennsylvania early on November 7th. The victory of Biden and the vice presidential candidate, Senator Kamala Harris, shatters the glass ceiling for women and minorities across the country. Harris is the country's first female vice president, first black vice president, and first person of Indian descent to take the office. In response to the news, Republican Rensselaer County Executive Stephen McLaughlin said, quote, "The economy today is healthy, gas prices are low, jobs are being created, and our country is seeing some measure of peace and stability in the world. We are counting on the next president to continue and expand on those good results and to bridge the gaps that now exist in a divided nation," unquote. Republican U.S. Rep. Tom Reed of Corning was the first Republican member of the state's congressional delegation to speak about the election call. He said the country must continue to transparently count and certify the results of the election. Quote, "However, out of respect and in deference to the moment, I extend my congratulations to President-elect Biden," unquote, he said. Quote, "We are ready to come together and work as one and help all Americans through the difficult times ahead," unquote. Republican U.S. Rep. Elise Stefanik declined to comment despite a press inquiry. Republicans in the state legislature have remained quiet, and Nick Langworthy, chairman of the state GOP, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Democrats from Albany, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Governor Andrew Cuomo, and others celebrated and savored the victory. Democrat Representative Antonio Delgado urged unity after a bitter campaign and a polarizing presidency divided the nation. Quote, "Now is the time to come together and unite around our shared values and common purpose," unquote, he said. Quote, "The journey to perfect our union remains paramount," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Morgan McKay is reporting for New York State of Politics that SUNY students will not return to campus after Thanksgiving break. Governor Andrew Cuomo is now asking private colleges to consider doing the same. All SUNY students will be tested before leaving for the Thanksgiving break and continue to learn remotely after that. The statewide COVID-19 infection rate has increased to 1.9%, and upstate is doing worse than downstate, Cuomo said. Western New York's positive infection rate is currently 2.8%. The Finger Lakes is at 2.6%, and Central New York is at 2.2%. Cuomo said he will speak with local officials this weekend in Erie, Monroe, and Onondaga counties about targeted restrictions to deal with the COVID-19 cases. The governor also announced there will be no fans allowed into Buffalo Bills games anytime soon. Quote, it would be reckless to open the stadium up to spectators, unquote, he said. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Claverack resident Marcia Sullivan and Bank of Green County have received the 2020 Belinsky Award for their work and support of animals by the Columbia Green Humane Society. Sullivan was honored for her longtime work as a volunteer at the Greenport Shelter, an adoptive mother to countless shelter animals and special needs and organizer for numerous fundraisers to benefit the Humane Society, said Ron Perez, president and CEO of the Columbia Green Humane Society. The Bank of Green County was acknowledged for its ardent philanthropic support provided through the bank's foundation and assistance with the Paycheck Protection Program, Perez said. The Belinsky is the highest award bestowed on a person, business, or organization whose passion and commitment to the well-being of all animals is embodied by their generosity and devotion, as demonstrated by Dr. Jerry Belinsky, Perez said. The first award was given to Dr. Jerry Belinsky during the shelter's Paul's Picnic fundraiser in August 2010 and is presented annually in recognition of the doctor's devotion to helping all animals and more than 30 years of commitment to and support of the shelter. Belinsky is a volunteer medical director at the Humane Society, Perez said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high near 71 and a low around 45. Should be sunny again on Monday with a high of 71 and a low around 44. And then mostly sunny is the forecast again on Tuesday with a high of 69 a low around 53. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Inga Iverson of Philmont, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Oh! Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Green Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Ashuda. I'm 18 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Fatia. I'm 6 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am 10 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
We're all from Hudson today. That doesn't always happen, but today it did. And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate,
bookish things.
And we're often joined by our friends AJ and Nico, but they're not here today. So we hope they're reading some good books while they're missing out on all the radio fun. But yeah, so we're going to talk about some books. Why don't we start with Mashuda?
So the book I have for today is Roundhouse. And I don't know, for Roundhouse, I always forget the author. So,
Louise Erdrich.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, so I'm reading that book for my English class. And, like, so far, it's a hard read. But it's about, like, cruelty Native Americans faced in our history. And so it's about, like, a woman, she gets raped by a white man, but because of that, they used to be a happy family, and because of that incident, she becomes depressed, completely broken, and she basically, like, stops talking to her family, especially her son. So Geraldine is the woman's name, and so basically it's affecting her son because, like, Geraldine used to be, like, a happy mother, always talking to her son, and taking care of him. And then suddenly his mom stops talking, basically locks herself in the room all the time. He, as a 13-year-old son, gets worried. And then he, like, tries to investigate what happened. And then him and his friend tries, like, his mom to talk. And months have passed, and he's trying. But then finally, one day, his friend, I forgot his name, finally, like, encouraged her to open up. And then she starts opening up about the incident. And then, like, then Geraldine feels better talking about it because she gets, like, lighthearted from it because, like, she, like, built it up, like, that emotion inside of her, and now she feels much better opening up about it. But, like, Joe and his friend is more curious of finding, like, clues that can get her justice. But, like, so far that's what happened, and it's like we're still reading it. And then, so, like, I'm excited what's gonna happen. Even, like, back then, like, there's laws, but still, it's, like, because of discrimination, it's hard to get justice. But it's a good read, but it's, like, also hard to read it about, like, all the description the author uses. But I totally recommend, like, our readers to check it out. I mean, our listeners, I'm sorry, our listeners to check it out.
They might be readers, too.
Yeah, but I meant, like, listeners. Yeah,
I just read that book last year, I think, and really liked it. Although there's sad parts involved, and I just looked it up because I was curious about, I couldn't remember when it was set, but it was set in 1988. But yeah, I think it's an interesting book because it tackles serious subject matter, but it has enough, like, light moments between the friends or between family that it's not, like, too heavy, and you kind of get a sense of the community and the family and their friendships. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Hope you continue to. She's a very popular author. I have her on my reading list for this month. I definitely want to read one of her newer books.
Yeah, she got a lot of fame after writing this book.
How about Fatia? Do you want to share a book?
Yes, I do. I have, like, two books to read, but Miss Cathy, like, this one better than, like, the other.
She liked your book that you wrote more than Dr. Seuss. That's pretty cool.
So, like, I can read, like, these two books. So which one do you want?
Well, instead of reading them, can you tell us what they're about or what they're like?
This one?
Sure. Why don't you tell us about the book that you wrote and illustrated? What's it about?
Butterflies can eat a lot of stuff. Butterflies eat... This is like the picture. Can you see the words?
Beautiful. So this is a book about butterflies?
Yeah, the queen butterflies dream. Like the queen butterfly has a son. So butterflies grow up to be a caterpillar and turn into a butterfly. How do frogs grow? How do fish grow? A good day at school every day and every week and every year. My favorite thing to do is make a big, big rainbow. And my family, I have one sister and two brothers and mom and dad. We have six of our family, six. My school, I have a good day at school. My teachers are the best ones.
This is an interesting book. So it seems like it has a mix of like facts and also getting to know you and your interests and what your life's like.
My favorite thing to do is make a big, big heart. I'm done.
That's a beautiful book. So to make that book, you had a blank notebook and then you decorated it, right? And wrote in it?
That was the notebook that like Miss Emily gave me. And then I decorated it all. Remember I showed you like this, like this stuff and like the background stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you decorated the cover and the back.
And then I filled it up. For so many days now. It took me a lot of days to do that.
Yeah, it takes a long time to write a book, especially if you're illustrating it too. Thanks for sharing, Fatia. How about Amelia?
I got this book on Halloween night. It was a gift from my friend who had gone to Salem. She got this in Salem, and it is titled A Motived Inquiry into the Nature of Witchcraft and How Persons Guilty of That Crime May Be Convicted and the Means Used for Their Discovery, Both Negatively and Affirmatively, According to Scripture and Experience by John Hale. I practiced that while I was on mute, just so you know.
it's a very long title.
It is from the actual Salem witch trials. In the back, which actually explains what this is about, probably better than the title can, says, this balanced account of Salem Village witchcraft trials, including the events leading up to them, was first printed in 1702. The book was written by Reverend John Hale, the pastor of the church in Beverly, Massachusetts. He concludes with the theory that it was Satan, not the witches, who used the manipulation of objects to afflict others. Reverend Hale had been the preacher in Salem since 1664, and was a participant in the trials, attending them and praying with the accused. This eyewitness account is one of the rarest, having been reprinted once in 1771 and again in 1973. So my friend took a trip to Salem, Massachusetts, earlier in October and got this book for me. We're both into like this kind of stuff. I'm like really into The Crucible, in which John Hale, Reverend Hale, is a character. Even though The Crucible stretches the facts a little bit more than is necessary. But that's because The Crucible is like an analogy for the Red Scare more than a story of the witch trials. But this book, I know the readers won't be, the watchers, I did the same thing. I know the watchers won't be able to see it, but you can see that it has been like pretty much printed and copied right from how he wrote it. It's like, it has like... smudges and stuff all over it. It'll probably take a while for me to like get through it all. And my dad, I think also wants to read this after I'm done with it. It's the kind of thing that I wouldn't sit down and read in one sitting, even if I could, but it's more like the kind of thing I'd like to, like, you know, skip through and read and try to, like, see through the perspective of someone who is actually there for the witch trials. It's really interesting. It's really cool. And I'm really happy my friend got it for me. And I'm very excited to read it.
I'm interested in learning more about that time period too, the Salem witch trials. I have some ancestors who were involved in those. One was a judge that sentenced people. One was an accused witch, although she got out. Like, she was sentenced and then eventually was let go. And I think also somebody that was really into accusing people, and somebody that was like, stop accusing people. Like, don't you dare accuse anyone in my family. Lots of characters. I'm curious in learning more about it. That's a good Halloween time read. I know we're past Halloween, but
we're past Halloween, but like, it was very Halloween, it was forever. A really cool gift to get on Halloween.
Yeah, of course. How about you, Lena?
It's not really a book, but it's from an article, well, something that we learned in class that I found interesting. And it's basically talking about food insecurity. And what food insecurity is that they talked about how food... Wait, let me look at my notes. Okay, so food insecurity really means that a person... and it doesn't have a reliable access to affordable, nutritious goods. Even if you have access and can afford it, what if you don't know how to prepare it? And that's what food insecurity is. And also, I'm going, also in my free time, I created a character, yay, that was kind of Halloween themed, what some people would think, because his name is Stitchy, and he kind of looks like a stitched-up doll, you know? So, yeah.
Is this a character that you drew?
Yes.
Do you write about the character, too? Like, do you write out a character description, or do you just keep that in your head?
I don't usually write out a character description, but I'm actually thinking of starting to write a character description. So, like, if I look back at the character description later, I can be like, oh, I want to kind of change this. Oh, maybe change this also.
Are you thinking the character is going to be in a story that you write, or is it just a character that you wanted to draw for fun? Or both?
well, both. Also, he might be featured on my YouTube channel. So, like, yeah, I'm not going to advertise myself.
I still need to find your YouTube channel someday. Maybe you'll give it to me.
I can text it to you later. I'll send you one of my videos.
Our listeners will have to find you on their own.
Yes.
The perks of being a co-host on the radio show. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. I want to see this character. They sound cute or scary. Or both.
I'll also send you a picture.
Cool. Well, I thought since November is Native American Heritage Month that I would talk about a book series that I started. I read the first book, I think, a few years ago. Did I read it? Oh, yes. I read it in 2018. And it's part of a trilogy, which the second book has come out, but I don't believe the third book has. And I still need to read the second book. But it is called How I Became a Ghost by Tim Tingle. That's the first book. And it's about a young man named Isaac, who is a Choctaw Indian. I believe he's 13. And he and his family are on the Trail of Tears. And as is suggested by the title of the book, How I Became a Ghost, he does not survive the Trail of Tears. But the story continues with him as a ghost. So when you first meet him, he's telling the story, and he is a ghost at the time when he's telling the story, but in the story, he's not a ghost yet. And there's other characters in the story, including a young woman that he meets on the Trail of Tears. There's a sheep-shifting panther boy, a little 5-year-old ghost, and then he has a talking dog as well named Jumper. So these are your primary characters along the way. And I remembered from when I read this a few years back that I really liked how this story opened. It also has a map. It's not a fantasy map, which are our favorite maps, but I still like that it has a map in the front. But then the first chapter starts in 1830, and it opens with, "Maybe you have never read a book written by a ghost before. I am a ghost. I am not a ghost when this book begins, so you have to pay very close attention. I should tell you something else. I see things before they happen. You are probably thinking, I wish I could see things before they happen. Be careful what you wish for." Oh, and then no, he's 10 years old when the story starts. I think maybe he's older in the second one. I know he's still 10 in this one. I don't know where I got 13 from. Maybe that was the roundhouse. Oh yeah, I was just looking at the description for the roundhouse and he's 13. But yeah, so the second book in the series is called When a Ghost Talks, Listen. And this one sounds really interesting because it involves time travel. So the description reads, "As his family continues the long walk to Indian territory, 10-year-old Isaac, our narrator and now a ghost, meets the famed Choctaw chief and U.S. Army General Pushmataha. There have been surprises aplenty on the trail thus far, but this one tops them all, or so he thinks, until Isaac and his 3 Choctaw comrades learn they can now also time travel. With Pushmataha as their guide, Isaac and friends head back in time to the Washington, D.C. of 1824 to bear witness for the Choctaw chief, who has come to the nation's capital at the invitation of his dear friend, Andrew Jackson. You cannot blame the people before you for mistakes their ancestors made, Chief Pushmataha tells the little band, making a powerful and timeless point. One made more so as the reader travels from graveyards to boarding schools from 1824 to 2018, experiencing firsthand the joy of never leaving." So this is one that I'm going to read this month in honor of Native American Heritage Month, and also because it just sounds really good and exciting. And I really liked the first one a lot, so look forward to visiting with Isaac and friends again.
Yeah, it sounds like a super interesting book.
Yeah, it's been on my reading list for a while, and I think it was one of those books that I borrowed from the library and then never got to read, and then realized I should bring it back so somebody else could read it, and then never got around to taking it out again. So this month it's happening. And Tim Tingle's a really great author too. He has, I don't know if he writes any books for adults, but he has some books for kids that are also very good. And I guess back in, this is in his author bio. So his great, great grandfather, John Carnes, walked the Trail of Tears back in 1835. And then in 1993, Tim Tingle retraced the trail to Choctaw homelands in Mississippi and began recording the stories of tribal elders. And it was from those memories that this story was inspired. So that's that. That's what I'm planning to read next. I'm actually currently reading another book that is by a Native American author, which I've mentioned on the show because it's a newer release. So I mentioned it as a book that I was wanting to read, and now I am reading it. It's called Apple, Skin to the Core by Eric Gansworth, and it's a novel in verse. It's about his, or it's a, not a novel in verse, I'm sorry, it's a memoir in verse about his life growing up, as well as some of his family history. So the history of boarding schools and noting the word apple is a slur in Native American communities, where it's the idea is that you're white on the inside and red on the outside. So it's an insult that is used in some Native communities, apparently. But so far, it's very good. And on the topic of Native American Heritage Month, I can let you all know that we have a local history talk coming up November 19th, it's a Thursday at 6 p.m. It's a virtual talk. So you can register on the library website to get the Zoom link if you're interested. And it's called The Stockbridge Munsee, Not the Last of the Mohicans. And we have a woman named Heather Bruegel, who's the Director of Community Affairs for the Stockbridge Munsee community. And she's a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin as well, who's going to talk about the Stockbridge Munsee community, which was an integrated society with Indigenous families and European immigrants. And basically, the Stockbridge Munsee are this band of people that, well, we'll learn more at the talk, but the people, the Mohicans who lived in this area were pushed out and ended up in the Stockbridge area, and then eventually made their way out to Wisconsin. So many of the people who their ancestors lived in this area originally are now out in Wisconsin. And of course, there's also people who have moved on to other areas, but we're going to learn more about them. It should be interesting. So you can check out hudsonarealibrary.org to find out more information about that and to register for the event.
I'm sorry, I just realized I was trying to say it sounds interesting, like, repeatedly, and didn't realize I was on mute, but now that I'm not on mute anymore, it sounds interesting.
Like, why aren't you acknowledging me?
I'm trying real hard. I think I'd be used to it at this point, but I still try to talk when I'm on mute. I still try to say things to my family if I am not on mute during class. It's very stressful.
Yeah, it's hard to get used to. I recently started following the library from the Stockbridge Munsee community on Facebook, and they have some really interesting posts in classes. Like, they're starting up language classes, so you could learn Mohican. But I'm curious, because I couldn't tell from the event listing if it was a beginner, like, you don't know any Mohican, learning Mohican, or if it was, like, you know some Mohican, let's get better at it kind of class. Seems interesting. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for today, but we hope everyone has a good week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Happy reading. Bye.
Happy reading.
That's what we said, bye, at the same time.
Yeah, jinx.
Quatorze, brisé. 14, broken. 15.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
WOOC's H. Bosch Jr. co-host Michelle Mazarin spoke with Adam Zaranko, the executive director of the Albany County Land Bank, about their programs. Go to albanycountylandbank.org for more information.
Hello again, everyone. This is H. Bosch Jr. with my co-host, Michelle Mazarin. Welcome to the show, Triple E's, Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Adam Zaranko, executive director of the Albany Land Bank. This is part one of a two-part segment. Welcome, Adam. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk today.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate you. So let me go right into it. How did the land bank get its start in Albany?
Sure. So we were formed in 2014, and we were formed under a state law that came into effect in 2011 or 2012, which basically gave what's known as foreclosing governmental units or certain levels of government that perform tax foreclosures special authority to create what are called land banks. And in the state of New York, land banks are not-for-profit corporations that are granted special powers by state law that give us the tools that we need to reclaim vacant and abandoned properties. And the reason we were formed was largely coming out of the 2008 foreclosure crisis. Governments found themselves overwhelmed, and so did communities with high numbers of vacant and abandoned properties. And local governments, for all of the good work they try to do, aren't equipped with the tools needed to deal with large numbers of tax foreclosed properties. So that's kind of how we got our start.
Okay. And pardon me, tell us a little bit about your history. Where you from, your background?
Sure. So I was raised in the Capital Region. I grew up largely in the town of Bethlehem.
Okay.
And
518 area.
518 guy. Yep. Okay. 518. And
schooling?
I still am. I'm back here now. And it's in the same town I grew up in. And I'm an urban planner by background, professional education. And I actually worked in the city of New York for New York City government for about a decade in different capacities. And then decided to move. Well, got married, decided to settle down, have children, moved back to my hometown and saw this opportunity online to lead a land bank, which are new entities at the time, especially. And here I am 4.5 years later. We're one of the largest and most active in the eastern United States.
Great, great. Where'd you go to high school at real quick, Adam?
I went to Bethlehem Central High School.
Okay, all right.
Yep.
So now, what is the primary goal of the Albany Land Bank?
Sure. So we're actually a countywide land bank because Albany County forecloses on properties that go into property foreclosure for non-payment of taxes. And that includes the city of Albany, which is where most people are familiar with us because that's where most of our properties are located. But we work in all 19 municipalities in the county. So we actually deal with vacant and abandoned or foreclosed properties in suburbs, Watervliet, Cohoes, all the way out to the hill towns of like Bern, Knox, and Westerlo. And so as a countywide entity, we're tasked with basically using the special powers that land banks are granted to take these properties. And we do three things. We acquire these properties, so we take them into our ownership so they're not just sitting out there rotting away or getting illegal dumping or not being maintained. Two is we do whatever we need to do to either maintain them, secure them, improve them, make them marketable. Sometimes that's cleaning them out, cleaning them up, shoveling the snow on the sidewalks if it's in the cities to make, you know, so we're good neighbors. And then step three is we try to find ways to responsibly dispose of these properties, which means do a real fair and inclusive and deliberate decision-making process on where these properties are going, looking at who's buying them, what's the plan for the property, does the buyer have the ability to execute that plan if they're selected, and really not just sell them to whoever comes up and buys them from us, but make sure that they're successful outcomes for the neighborhood and for the buyers. So okay. That's just three steps. It's a pretty straightforward approach to a very complex challenge.
Good to know. Good to know. So my next question, does all land banks operate the same way?
That's a great question. So no
I'm a great guy. I'm a great guy.
I'm getting to see that. These are good questions. So yeah.
And
so,
this is
so,
a great and this is a great show.
This I love it. So this so no, the answer is every land bank's a little different. So there's now 26 land banks in the state of New York, and this state originally allowed 10, and our land bank was one of the first 10 because they were new entities with a lot of power, frankly, for being a quasi-governmental. They were very successful out the gate, so the state increased the level to 20, then 25, and now actually 35 are allowed to be formed. So there's 26. They come in all different shapes and sizes and purpose in terms of mission because – you know, ours is countywide, but across the river in Troy, Troy has a city-specific land bank that really only focuses on some of the most challenged neighborhoods in the city of Troy. And then you go to the Capital Region land bank in that serves Amsterdam and Schenectady, and they're focused on largely those two cities. And then you can go into western New York, where there is a land bank called Greater Mohawk Valley that serves four counties plus the cities of Utica and Rome as one big land bank. And, you know, it goes on from there. But many are countywide, although they may focus their work on a specific city within that county where there's the largest number of vacant properties. Like in our case, it's the city of Albany. In Onondaga County, it's the city of Syracuse. But we do work, we're really set up to tackle the problems that are unique to that specific geography or local government or community.
Okay, so give me two programs you're really proud of. Your signature programs, because I'm sure you got your hands in so many pots.
we try to because we try to be very creative. We pride ourselves on being very creative and innovative in the space that we work in because land banks are so new. There's not a lot of playbook to look at or blueprint to follow. So we are really kind of blazing some of these pathways as we go.
We
do that is we use our special powers and authority to be more flexible than the old way of doing it didn't work out for all communities of just selling to the highest bidder at tax auction. So we have been very creative at looking at other cities across the U.S. to replicate what works there and also make our own programs. So I have three programs we're very proud of. I know you asked
Let's hear about it.
The time it would take me for two. So,
okay, hold on. Drum roll, please.
So here it goes. The first one's focused on vacant and abandoned lots. And so we actually have, not a lot of people think of this, we get more vacant land and lots than we do buildings because it's just the nature of the business. But most people see the buildings because that's what more visual and they think we only deal with vacant buildings. We have a program called Spend a Little, Get a Lot that's designed to incentivize through all the different things we could dial in local ownership of purchasing vacant land so people in the neighborhood can have more green space, more garden space, in some cases adjacent to their property, more parking space. And we do it in lots of different ways. It's on our website. We provide a closing credit. We sell to renters. If you live there, if you've been renting for a while, you don't have to be a property owner. You just have to be invested in your neighborhood. And so that's a very unique program that has been pretty successful for us getting rid of lots. I guess responsible disposing of lots that have been very challenging.
Okay.
No, you could. Sorry, do you have a question?
Real quick then. I want you to answer those real quick. Then I'll wrap up.
So the second is called our EOP or Equitable Ownership Program. And that's a first time home buyer program that's designed to address the gap between black and white home ownership rates in the city of Albany, especially, which are among the largest in the nation for cities our size, for lots of reasons that date back 100+ years, redlining and disinvestment and things like that. But we're trying to close that gap by being more flexible and equitable. And so we provide a whole slew of resources, including a scope of work to rehab the building, a construction mentor to help people go through the process. And we essentially cut the price of this property in half in support of it because it's more about the outcome. And then the last is Inclusive Neighborhoods, which is a partnership with the Albany Community Land Trust and the Land Bank, where we have a relationship where we get them properties in neighborhoods where they have trouble getting properties. And a land trust basically just preserves affordability forever on any building that they own for families and individuals. So those are
real quick.
They're all on our website.
Great. So real quick, just tell me real quick in a couple of words, how are all these questions doing right? Or how are all of these programs doing right now?
They all are gaining traction. They all have room to grow. So check them out on our website and sign up for our emails because we have different properties and different programs.
With COVID-19, do you foresee an increase in foreclosure properties down the road because of, you know, the impact of people losing their jobs and the economy?
Great question. Yes. So the answer is yes. We are at our land bank, and land banks and community development practitioners across the country are all thinking about this a lot for several reasons. One, as you indicated, the eviction. So a lot of people, record numbers of unemployment means people can't pay their rent to their landlords, means that there will eventually be more evictions coming up when the eviction moratoriums are lifted. But also landlords that aren't collecting revenue that they need. A lot of landlords, especially in more distressed neighborhoods, are already on the margins. They're not flush with cash. So they have to make payment to their banks for their mortgages and or property taxes. And so a lot of things holding back that dam from breaking are these moratoriums that local governments across the country keep extending. But eventually, you know, those aren't sustainable forever. And we're really worried about if measures aren't put in place, that there'll be a large influx of vacant and abandoned properties caused by evictions and that whole cycle. So there are things that people are doing, like foreclosure prevention, keeping people in their homes, that go upstream from land banks. We're on the end of the line for these properties. So we're really supportive of those, because we actually don't want any properties. We don't want to even be in business eventually. We want these properties to be solved for before they become vacant. What we're really focused on thinking about, what would be new and unprecedented at any given scale, is commercial and mixed use properties going vacant and abandoned, because the foreclosure crisis of 2008 was largely focused on residential mortgages and foreclosures. You're seeing a lot of small businesses because of the pandemic go out of business, and a lot of small mom and pops and other businesses were occupying spaces and not a lot are filling those spaces. And the same situation with landlords having to maintain payments and things like that. So there's a different set of properties. They create different challenges but different opportunities. And so as an entity designed to figure this out, we're definitely thinking about it. We hope it doesn't get to the scale that people are saying it could, but it's a big deal. And the last piece we're thinking about is the disproportionate impact that COVID-19 is having on communities of color and people of color, especially where most of our properties are located, because of economic disinvestment, intentional and systemic. So, you know, what opportunities can we take that terrible circumstance and create something like a long-term, more equitable recovery in these neighborhoods through our more flexible process? Because the pressures are real in distressed neighborhoods too. For people are trying to buy up a lot of real estate right now, seeing an opportunity in a market downturn, and they don't always have the community's best interest in mind.
So given that, can you talk about stabilization versus demolition? And when I was looking at the Albany Land Bank budget, it seems like when it comes to the property expense side, demolition is a huge part of the budget, running about $600K a year, with stabilization running half of that. How do you decide what building you're going to stabilize versus demolish?
Sure. So demolition costs can actually go north of $1 million a year. The problem is that vacant and abandoned properties that go to land banks have gone without intervention for so long. A lot of properties we got when we were started were vacant for over a decade, sometimes two decades. And upstate New York weather, it doesn't take long once the freeze thaw starts where the building starts to deteriorate to the point where it cannot be saved. And how you define whether or not it can be saved can be sliced in a lot of different ways. But for us, it's send in an engineer and have them determine that. If public safety is paramount, so if the building has to come down for safety, it comes down. And that's very expensive. A demolition can be between $40,000 to $90,000 a building, because some of these buildings have a lot of, they're unstable. They can't even have people go in and stabilize them, unfortunately. The other way we decide of whether we can stabilize or demo with limited funds is, you know, is it cost less to stabilize the building than to demolish it, right. If we do that stabilization, will then the market, someone be able to buy it and take it across the finish line? A lot of the properties that we receive, a fair amount of them, require more to rehab and save than they're worth when they're fully rehabbed, because they're in neighborhoods that are depressed property values because there's so many vacant buildings around. So it's an upside down formula. So one by one, we try to think about what decision point to make. We try to be strategic and tactical, but there's more demand for demo and stabilization than there are funds available, unfortunately.
Disposing of a lot or trying to sell it, what do you see are the main barriers and challenges the land bank encounters with these, especially these small urban city lots? That's the majority of your inventory.
Yes, it is. So lots are very, very challenging, and that's why we keep coming up with different programs or open to ideas to our application process. We always try to sell to an adjacent property owner. We will directly notify them if we come in ownership. A lot of times, though, the neighboring property is vacant also because, you know, maybe there's a lot of vacant buildings in some neighborhoods where these lots are. Or if it's the former owner, we don't sell back properties that were foreclosed to the previous owner. Or there's rentals and the landlord lives far away and they're absentee, unfortunately. So we would love to do those side lot sales, and wherever we can, we do for a very fair price. The other ideas we get are people say, why don't you just build new houses on those? The problem is, again, because of the economics, it costs way more to build than the property's worth. So no one can do that as a you know, money-making proposition. And even with government subsidies, it doesn't cover the gap of the appraisal gap. So new construction is not viable right now.
I understand you also have a new program that you kind of are putting together these clusters, and there's some work going on in the South End.
Yes.
That's something kind of a new program that you're...
Yeah. So we're pretty excited about this concept. It's the first time a land bank's tried it in the state of New York, but because individually these lots they're very hard to find a buyer that is willing to buy them, even at $100 a lot, which is as low as we sell for sometimes. Individually, they have little value, but we saw that we're assembling them over time, over many years. We're trying to put them together to do a larger project and use our powers as banking properties or assembling them to create that value. And by controlling the real estate and being a public authority, we're trying to go out and find development partner that can then go finance a deal and create a neighborhood revitalization, a scaled project. We're starting in the South End. We're pretty close. We're negotiating with a developer right now where we would be development partners and we would help shape it in a way that benefits the community, not just what the developer necessarily would do if left to their own devices.
Okay, so I'm kind of running out of time. Before we wrap up, can you just talk to the listeners about how the funding is for the land bank and where you see, because I understand there were a lot of grants that you had, and I'm not sure if those grants ended and what's happening.
Yeah. So the grants that were designated for land banks in the state of New York were very helpful, and they let us do more than just about any other state association of land banks, but they're coming to an end this year. We don't have a new source of grant funding available, identified for any land bank. So we're all kind of in the same boat of holding our breath and looking for grants and resources like a lot of other entities right now. However, we're hopeful that there are some federal level legislation that we're supporting at the statewide level to hope that federal funds could then become available. We'll see what happens to the speaker next week. That may impact it. But we are also working. We have a statewide association. We're working with the state government, even though we know time is tough. To find state funding, and we try every year because we are quasi-state entities because we're set up by the state to help the municipalities of the state. We end up actually saving local governments and state governments money because we do it for less, frankly, because we're so purpose-built. So we're just kind of bootstrapping by financially like everyone else. We maintain ourselves through property sales, and Albany County's been very supportive and generous and supporting us with some operating subsidy every year, plus a good mix of properties. So we're going to be here to deal with the next tidal wave of properties. That's our goal. That's our mission.
Okay. Well, I hate to say this, but we have to wrap up. And I thank you, Adam, for being with us today. Stay safe.
Thank you both for the opportunity to speak.
You're welcome, Adam. And we got to have you back because there's plenty of more. There's a lot of other stuff we want to talk about.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth, Ruth!
Just when I've begun to get myself together.
just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again. Just when I'm about to make it work without you, you look into my eyes and lie those pretty lies, and pretty soon I'm wondering.
Mississippi.